And welcome back to the Big Wake Up Call. I'm Ryan Gatenby, and time to chat with my next guest, who is the author of a very fun, informative, I kind of got lost in this book, which I think is the idea. It's from National Geographic called Here, Not There, 100 Unexpected Travel Destinations. We are going to visit with Andrew Nelson. And Andrew, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ryan. Thank you for having me this morning.
If that was one of your goals to kind of get lost in this book, that's exactly what I did. And each of the destinations you're talking about, like, I want to go to there and kind of picturing myself. Like, you start making travel plans in your head when you get excited about some of these places.
I'm so glad I smiled. I know you can't see me, but I smiled when you said that you got lost in the book, because that was exactly an important reason for me to write it, which was to hope that by seeing these 100 examples of unfamiliar destinations or destinations familiar destinations showcasing unfamiliar neighborhoods, that you would start thinking about doing some travel or have your own ideas about where you should go here and not there, as the book title is. But it was a book that was also written because, you know, since the pandemic, we've all had a collective case of FOMO.
Right.
Fear of missing out, right? So everybody has run over to Italy and to get and see the Parthenon, the famous building in Rome. There's a 3-hour wait, or you can wait for an entire afternoon trying to get to your camping site, if you're lucky to get it, in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Or once you get to these places, you discover, for example, that Myrtle Beach now seems to become as expensive as Monaco, where the millionaires go on the French Riviera. So those were other reasons. So the idea to find some low-cost, uncrowded alternatives, as well as something that's a little, you know, it ties into what we in National Geographic talk about, which is to protect the places we love as well. So we're all concerned about over-tourism and its impact on the environment. And
sure.
I thought if I could redirect travelers and readers away from less visited places that contain the same attributes as more crowded ones, then the planet and my readers could win. Everybody could.
One thing I like that you talked about in here, like weekend alternatives or, you know, kind of a day trip. And despite, I think, some bias against it, maybe because it's so close to here in Chicago, but you go into Milwaukee and people who haven't gone and don't understand the city, there are just some gems of neighborhoods that you would never even think about that you know, you kind of want to visit over and over again. I mean, Milwaukee's an hour and a half.
I know. And I when you said Chicago, I said, oh gosh, here comes Milwaukee. Because my suggestion was and this is really important, I think, really to talk about, which is I'm not saying don't go to Chicago or Paris. I'm not throwing shade on these longstanding icons.
Right.
We'll always have Paris and Manhattan and Yellowstone and Chicago. Everyone will see these places, and they will, but I wanted to give you those out-of-the-box destinations. So I like to say, and Milwaukee was a really surprising place. I had no idea what to expect, but I loved its gritty, can-do friendliness. I would walk into a bar or a tavern, because they love their bars and taverns in Milwaukee, as you know, and I would sit there and buy a beer, and within 5 minutes I was talking to somebody, and within 10 minutes it seemed they were inviting me to sit at their table and buying me a beer.
Yep.
I've never really experienced a place like that. And it reminded me of the grittiness of San Francisco before it put on yoga pants. So I know that sounds like a strange comparison, especially to San Francisco in these days, but there is a real, I think, pride that Milwaukeeans have, and there's amazing things to do there. I mean, you know, they have a Lakeshore Drive. They have that fabulous lake in the park, a great art museum. You easily could spend a weekend there. And I know Chicago and Milwaukee are sort of, you know, are you frenemies? What would you describe the relationship between Chicago and Milwaukee?
See, now I have no beef with Milwaukee because I'm, you know, from Chicago, but I did radio in Wisconsin for 5 years. I had the best time up there. So I guess frenemies, but, you know, I say like Cubs, Brewers, that's a friendly rivalry. You go Bears, Packers, that's a whole other thing, but I never get in a fight with Brewers fans.
Well, it's funny too, because I also have Montevideo in Uruguay as a destination to go to, not just Buenos Aires, which is literally across the river, the Rio de la Plata. And they are, you know, they're kind of like cast members of The Real Housewives. They all like each other, but they're also like, they're, you know, especially when their soccer teams play. But what's interesting about Montevideo, it's smaller than BA, Buenos Aires, and it's also got the same sort of flavor and great red wine, the tinto, and of course the meat. All of the cattle in Uruguay are grass-fed, so they're not corn-fed. So the meat's fantastic, the people are charming, great place. But again, I love those rivalries between places as well. I think it's friendly rivalries are really kind of fun. So that was great.
I think one thing you kind of touch on here in the book, too, is even going to familiar places, like people just, again, to use Chicago as again, people think downtown and Millennium Park, but I'm like, the good stuff is out in the neighborhoods. Get into the neighborhoods, and you're going to find the best little shops and restaurants and places to hang out where your normal tourists aren't going.
Absolutely. I mean, everywhere from Wicker Park to Ukrainian Village, I'm surprised that people don't go to those places. Because they seem so, that's the place neighborhoods are where I immediately make a beeline for, because those are the secrets of cities. So all cities have secrets. And what I mean by secrets, they have neighborhoods that nobody seems to know about, not even the people who live in them. And I'll tell you a really interesting one. We all know that Los Angeles, it's a giant sprawling city, right? And we all know that when you go to LA, the first thing you do is look west to the Pacific, and you want to go to Santa Monica, Venice Beach, Hollywood, Beverly Hills. But I say head east of downtown. There are these wonderful neighborhoods like Mount Washington and Eagle Rock that have these crazy eclectic bungalows, also set on the hillside. And they have lively restaurants, little known museums, and there's even a collection of outdoor stairways built into the sides of the hills that were built there in the 1920s, Ryan, when, of course, L.A. wasn't a car culture. It had streetcars.
Right.
So you would climb down from your little hillside bungalow, because you didn't have a car. You take these steps, concrete steps with, you know, handles, and you go down and you get on the streetcar. You go to your office in downtown. You come back up, and those steps are still there, and they're a great way to really get into the heart of those neighborhoods. Just climbing, and you get a workout too, and you see great unexpected views of downtown LA. No cliche views from East LA.
Well, Andrew, I wish we had more time, because there's lots of places I'd love to discuss, but encourage everyone to check it out. Here, Not There, 100 Unexpected Travel Destinations from National Geographic. It is now available where books are sold. We've been visiting with Andrew Nelson, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Ryan.